Let's talk about some of the news people that you worked with during your time there at WKLO when you were news director.
Earlier, I think there were three people there, Ken Rowland, Bob Henry, and a guy named Jack Thurston, who that was his air name. His real name was Jack Meisberg, who was a weekend person who worked regularly every weekend. And that was about it. And the guy that I replaced had been the night newsman, so, you know, we had three newsmen. We eventually expanded that considerably. I think we probably had maybe seven or eight people at one time at the peak of the expansion. But there were a lot of good people that worked there during that period of time. Some of them were what I would call not really serious news people, people who sounded good on the air and who had been hired because they sounded good. Ken Knight, for example, was a very dependable, very good-sounding news person, but he really didn't care that much about news. And he wasn't that much of a news gatherer, writer, you know, collector of stories. But he was a dependable air guy. Probably the most memorable people that I worked with would be Reed Yaden would be one. Reed, when he first started working for me, was probably younger than I was when I started working for WKLO. And was extremely conscientious and interested in developing himself and improving. And listened to what people told him and learned from their advice and direction, and turned out to be a really fine newsman, and went on to work with Bill Bailey over at Wacky, and then has been doing weather and helicopter reports for WHAS TV for quite a while. Bob Henry was really an odd person. He was, and I grew up in old-time radio, so I can relate to this. He was old-time radio. He came from the old WKLO. He was pretty set in his ways. Formats were not something he really liked too much. He always liked to improvise and ad-lib around the format, which was not, you know, encouraged. And he also had a habit of doing personal stories on the air about his family members and, you know, various connections that he had. Ken Rowland, when he was news director, we would have these news meetings, and there might be three or four people there, me, Bob Henry, John Sharp, somebody else maybe, and Ken would spend an hour critiquing things and saying, you know, we shouldn't do this, we shouldn't do that, we shouldn't do this. And every single thing that he talked about was something that Bob Henry did and nobody else did. So it was like he never said, you know, Bob, you need to stop doing this. He would tell us all, you know, you all shouldn't do whatever it was. And Bob would sit there and say, yeah, that's right, Ken. You tell him, Ken. And he was the one that Ken was talking to. We had another phase of our news game that was, I believe this was after Mitch left. We got into a thing where we hired some really, really good voices who also, you know, they were news people. I mean, they were not people that didn't do news, but they had good voices, like Ty Meredith, Jackson Kane, a guy named J. Paul Roberts, who was an extremely creative guy to the point that drove me crazy sometimes. He would get, you know, way outside the format in terms of what we were trying to do. But these guys had excellent on-the-air delivery and were relatively seasoned news people when they came in there and did a great job.
All right, let's talk about working with Bill Bailey. You were on the Bill Bailey Show, I know, for at least a period of time.
The Duke of Louisville.
What was it like working with Bill Bailey?
Well, it was a gas. I was fairly close to Bill Crisp when he worked there, and he was doing the morning show before Bill was. And Bill and virtually everybody else in the radio station was just outraged when Bill Bailey was hired. It was like, what are they thinking? You know, this guy is terrible. You know, he'll never amount to anything. You know, you've betrayed Bill Crisp, blah, 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 blah. So Bill came into a pretty negative environment in terms of, you know, his fellow employees, including me. I mean, I was not real happy about him being there either. And I don't think I worked with him initially when he first came in. I was listening to the air checks. I noticed Ken Knight was working with him initially, and Ken could have worked with anybody. I mean, he was just, you know, kind of like a machine. You know, push the button, I'll do the news, and I'll go back and, you know, tell me when you need me again. So when I started working with Bill, I can't remember why I started working mornings. I'd been working afternoons. He and I started talking to each other on the air, which he had not been doing before. This eventually turned out to be the Bill Bailey shtick. I mean, he wound up doing this with Reed Yaden for years at Wacky, and he and I did it a year and a half to 2 years at KLO before he left to go to LS. It was interesting because we started talking off the air on the intercom because we were sitting right, you know, a few feet from each other. We were observing things that were going by on the street. You know, I'd hear something you know, on the police radio and mention it to him, or I'd ask him a question about something, or I was just interacting with him all the time off the air. One day after the newscast, when you're supposed to, you know, here's Bill Bailey with more hit music, and he's supposed to hit the record and go, you know, he says, Mr. Brian. And I said, yes. And he starts talking to me about something, you know. It's like, well, okay, let's see where this goes. So next thing you know, this is like a regular occurrence. And we're coming out of every newscast, we're talking about something. And he would occasionally talk to me about things during the show. And it just got to be almost like a two-man show after a while. It was really fun. It made mornings a lot more interesting for me, because the morning news shift was a fairly dull piece of work because nothing new ever happened. It was all yesterday's news, and you're just doing a newscast every, you know, 25 minutes and so forth. But we had a great time. And I think part of that, and I'm sure Reed did the same thing at Wacky, is kind of like the typical straight man, Ed McMahon to Johnny Carson type of thing, is feeding him things to work off of and react to. So, you know, my sensitivity was always, is there something interesting that I've become aware of that he can play with? Most of those were things I told him off the air to begin with. But it was a great time. I mean, he was a brilliant, natural performer. I mean, I don't think he ever prepared for a show. And I don't think Bailey ever sat down and said, okay, what am I going to do today? Ahead of time, he just sat down at the microphone, turned it on, and let it roll.
Let's talk about the change in program directors from Terrell Matheny as Mitch Michael to Carl Truman Wigglesworth to Bill Hennis. From your perspective, you were in the news department by then. How was that different for you? How did that change?
My take on what I remember about that was that it was just sort of a gradual evolution. There wasn't anything dramatic about it or startling or anything else. We gradually shifted away from some of the stuff that Mitch had been doing into some other things, and I think we generally got a little more low-key and laid back during that period when Carl was program director. I don't remember exactly when this happened, but I think it was while Mitch was still program director that we adopted something we called continuous news, which was basically eliminating newscasts in some fairly significant blocks of time. And yet sort of counter-programming yourself by saying, well, we may have eliminated newscasts, but we haven't eliminated news. We cut out the regularly scheduled newscast from 8:55 in the morning, last newscast, till 11:55 in the morning. Then the next newscast was at 3:55 in the afternoon, and then you had the regular newscast during afternoon drive time. And then the next newscast was 11:55 p.m. So we eliminated a lot of newscasts. But we did not eliminate the news. We continued to have a news person working during all those times, and the newsman had the authority to go on the air whenever he wanted to. The idea was, if you looked at what was happening, most of the time, new stuff was not happening during those periods that we cut out the newscast, that we were just repeating, you know, the same old stuff that we'd done the hour before in a slightly reorganized fashion. And then at night that the kids basically didn't want to listen to news, so we didn't do newscasts. But we did do, I remember Reed wrote me a letter, Reed Gayden, some time ago, and was reminiscing about that experience, and he was working at night, and he said, you know, I came in and told him that we were going to start doing continuous news and we weren't going to have any newscasts during his shift. And he said, are you trying to tell me something? You know, and I said, yeah, I'm trying to tell you that the news is still important. You're doing the news. And when you need to go on the air, you have a license to go on the air. If you don't do it, you know, then you're not doing your job. And he said he eventually discovered that that was true, that he could do that. That was probably one of the more significant changes, because KLO had always been a really news-oriented station. And here we were lopping off fairly large numbers of newscasts that we had always done. The thing that I remember about the Bill Hennis period, if I remember anything, is just the tighten up, the sort of Bill Hennis approach to kind of the stuff that he did when he was on the air. It's, you know, quick, fast pace, a lot of energy, don't waste any time, you know. I was listening to one of those air checks from that period, and it was completely scoped, so there was no music on it at all. And it sounded like just one continuous record of the same stuff. You know, every break sounded the same as the one before. Now, if you divide them by records, you don't notice it. But if you put them back to back to back to back, it's like a machine almost. And I think that was his approach, was make it dependable, reliable, machine-like. Make a lot of noise, get it done. I don't have any sense of how the ratings went during those days. My take is that we started going downhill, you know, after Mitch left and certainly after Bailey left, and that we never really came back after that significantly, but I never saw any ratings.
All right, let's talk about some of the other disc jockeys that you worked with besides Bill Bailey. Throughout your time there, either as a newscaster or as a fellow DJ, who are some of your favorite WKLO jocks?
Bailey certainly was number one. I mean, he was probably 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. There just wasn't anything like Bailey. And he was so different than everybody else that, that he just by far is the best jock I ever worked with. The other guys that I worked with, Terrell was pretty strong when he was on the air. When I looked at it from a newsman's point of view, I would look at the disc jockey not so much as what they sounded like on the air, but how were they to work with, because I didn't listen to them on the air that much when I was doing news. My take on disc jockeys was, are they cooperative? Are they easy to work with? You know, do they blend the news into their program or do they fight it? Mitch was pretty good at, and some of the memos that he wrote about that were good, that it was important. It's something that's part of our programming, and, you know, he took care of it. Lee Gray was probably the worst on the other side. He hated it. He didn't want any interruptions his program at all, if he could help it. You know, if you gave him a signal for a traffic condition report, he would just glare at you, like, no, you can't do it. And then you'd just persist, and he'd put you on the air, but he was not real happy about it. Lee Gray was obviously a great disc jockey. Carl Truman Wigglesworth was pretty effective, but he had an unusually low-key style for an afternoon drive-time disc jockey. He was not an up-tempo, you know, screamer kind of a guy. Guys like Chuck Browning, who didn't work there very long, you know, turned out to be really great jocks. One of the guys that I worked with that I enjoyed working with as much as any was Jack Sorby. He was working 9 to noon, and I was doing the news with him. And we used to go out and have lunch together every day after we both got off at noon. He was a real pleasant person to work with, and I think he did a good job on the air. Barney Groven was kind of a wild man, but I think a very creative, high-energy guy who, I don't know what happened to him. I don't know if he ever had any success in radio after WKLO, because I don't think anybody's ever been able to track down, you know, where he went after he left. But he was an interesting guy to be around. Jim Fletcher was a good friend of mine, you know, before we came to Louisville, and I always enjoyed working with him and liked his work.
When did you hang it up as a news director at WKLO, and what did you do after that?
You know, I was very fortunate that, for some reason, Ernie Goodridge, he sort of was a mentor for me and adopted me in a way and allowed me to do a lot of different things that I probably would never have been able to do working someplace else. Somewhere back in the probably early 70s, Bill Perry, who had been the sales manager for KLO, left to go to San Antonio, and eventually he and his wife were killed in a traffic accident. But when he left to go to San Antonio, Ernie decided not to hire a sales manager to replace him right away and appointed me to a position that he called marketing sales manager, which I occupied the sales manager's office, but I was not the traditional sales manager, and worked for probably about a year on sort of administering the sales staff in terms of keeping track of commissions and sales and stuff and not actively engaging with them in their sales efforts, but also managing a marketing effort in terms of written materials and research and a lot of different things that we did to help support the sales staff. And I enjoyed doing that. And eventually, he decided to hire Bernie Thompson, brought him in as sales manager, and I went to a job that we called manager of news and information, in which I was back in charge of the news department, but also had all the marketing information responsibilities that I'd had before. That was a position I was in when I eventually left.
So why did you leave?
In the last several years that I was there, I had been involved in a lot of community activity, a lot of things outside the radio station, and had gotten involved with a guy named Harvey Sloan, who ran for mayor in 1973 and was elected. And so from August of 1972 until November 1973, I was on a leave of absence to work in his campaign, and when he was elected mayor, I resigned from WKLO to work in the mayor's office.
How long did you do that?
Off and on. I worked for Sloan for probably 7 years in both city government, and then he was reelected mayor after being out of office for a term. I went back and worked for him again, and then I held several other government jobs over a period of years, and My work since I left radio was pretty much divided between government and human resource management.
Now, would you look at your time at KLO as being one of the highlights of your professional career?
Definitely would. I probably, for a number of years, didn't realize it or hadn't focused on it that much. But recently, since we've been going back and talking to each other and reviewing some of the things that happened, I really appreciate, you know, what a tremendous experience it was to have worked there, particularly for such a long period of time, and to have gone through so many different evolutions of what they were doing and how they were doing it and different people that I worked with and so forth. And Ernie Gudridge in particular was certainly a great influence and a significant factor in my life. One of the things that I've discovered that was the most valuable lesson that I learned when I was in radio at WKLO was quick thinking, operating under pressure, having to digest information. I'm talking about the news side of the thing now. Having to react very quickly, assimilate things, make sense out of them, cut out all the stuff that doesn't really matter, boil it down to the 15-second audio cut or the lead for the story. And I found that skill to be extremely valuable in all the other work that I've done since then. That I just have an ability through years of training to cut through the garbage and come up with the meat of something. And that was kind of a surprise to me because I didn't really think that I learned that much from radio that would be helpful, you know, out of radio, but that's been very transferable and has lasted, you know, all these years.
What do you feel is your most important accomplishment in working at WKLO?
The job that I did as news director in general and the other positions where I still had involvement in news. I mean, we had a highly unusual news operation for a top 40 radio station. It was more like, you know, what a TV news operation would be today in terms of the number of people that are involved, the amount of street work that was done. At times we would have as many as three different people who were working on outside coverage all or parts of their work days. And we had beat reporters, we had people that covered regular beats, you know, like City Hall, police, courthouse, et cetera. We just did a lot of fairly innovative things. And I think going back to what I said about Mitch a while ago, the one thing that I really learned from him was the art of continuous improvement, the fact that you just kept working on all the details all the time, that you never were satisfied with the way things sounded, or in my case, the way the news was being covered. The thing that drove me crazy about it was that it was a 24-hour day job because news doesn't stop. So I would go home, but I'd be listening to the radio, and I'd be listening to the police radio, and I'd be, you know, calling the newsroom, did you check on this? Did you da-da-da? After a while, that drove me crazy. When I was working with Bailey in the morning, I couldn't get any sleep. I had to go to bed about 9 o'clock at night to get up and work, you know, that early in the morning. And I finally just had to develop the mental ability to turn it off, the discipline to just say, okay, it's bedtime, quit thinking about the news. It's time to sleep. Not go to bed and wake up, you know, at 5 o'clock and 4:30 or whatever and jump in the car and start worrying about it again. It was just a tremendous period in my life. I mean, I've done some pretty significant things in other jobs in my life, but I'm probably as proud of what I did at WKLO as anything I've ever done. We used to do election coverage. You know, on election night, we'd have people at different places, and we'd, you know, do the typical election coverage thing, which they don't do much anymore because it's too dull, but we did it because you were supposed to. And one of the things that drove me crazy about it, and Mitch as well, was the fact there was no way to produce the program off the air. So we were basically producing the program on the air, you know, saying things like, oh, this is so-and-so at such-and-such, and now I think we're going to go to so-and-so over at blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it was all that kind of crap. And Mitch talked to me about it and said, you know, this really sounds bad. Just too much, you know, from-to stuff going on. So I got with the phone company and said, you know, what can we do to get around this? Because we had, like, you know, equalized broadcast lines for the broadcast. But I said, can we just get, an open circuit telephone connection between all of these places? And they said, yeah, we can do that. And of course, this is what television does all the time now. And we did it. And I think it was probably three or four election cycles before anybody else figured out what we were doing. But it immediately just radicalized the whole sound of the thing. I mean, it just made it so much smoother and so much better organized and sounded so much better. And that was the kind of stuff that we were always looking for, was, you know, those little tweaks and edges. Some of them were technical, some of them were, you know, news coverage oriented.
How aware were you guys of the other media in town, especially the other radio media, particularly WAKY, your direct competition, which had a pretty good news department at the time, too? Did you guys really pay much attention to what the other guys were doing as far as scoops were concerned?
Sort of yes and no. First, for the entire time I worked in Louisville, there was no other competition except Wacky. So we didn't pay any attention to anybody else. Those two stations generally had between 65 and 75% of the audience, and everybody else was, you know, picking up the pieces. I didn't pay that much attention to what they were doing. I would almost always listen to their newscasts if they were on at different times than ours, and they usually were, to just see if there was any, you know, story that they had that we didn't have or something like that. But other than that, I didn't have time to, frankly, pay a lot of attention to what they were doing. Nobody else was even in the game, as far as I could tell.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that the WHAS really, you know, with 50,000 watts, were not a major player in Louisville at that time.
Well, they were below the radar. I mean, they were just terrible. I noticed that Don Keith said that when they first came in here, that Wynn was probably the number one station. You know, Wynn was just a typical adult-oriented 50s radio station, you know, that played Frank Sinatra and, you know, all those kinds of songs and had a nice sound. Bob Lyons worked over there before he came to WKLO. But after Wacky bombed everybody and then KLO came in and started eating into their dominance, everybody else was fours and fives, you know. And WHAS was like WHAS transported from the 40s into the 60s. I mean, they were just terrible. You know, they were programming to Barry Bingham, I think, who they were programming to. And they just didn't register at all in the ratings. So it was always a struggle between KLO and Wacky. And Wacky clearly won the long run. I mean, they clearly had a more dominant position in the market for a longer period of time than KLO had. But for a few years, it was hot and heavy. And it was good to be there.